here we are with Alex Blania, co-founder of WorldCoin. Alex, thank you so much for joining me. Welcome to the Defiant podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's so great to have you here. WorldCoin is one of the most interesting projects in crypto, I have to say. Very controversial, hugely ambitious. So as everyone listening probably knows, WorldCoin is the project that famously scans people's eyes or like irises in exchange for crypto with the idea or the goal of creating a global digital ID. It's raised over $240 million from huge investors, including Andreessen Horowitz, Blockchain Capital, and others. So, you know, really big, interesting project. So excited to have you update us on, you know, all the latest developments. I read that recently you announced a redesign of the Orb. In December, I saw you outlined plans to decentralize the project. So, you know, really interesting developments happening. But I'd love to just start with the basics. If you could just, you know, give an overview of what WorldCoin is.
The simple goal of WorldCoin is to create the largest financial network in the world. That's what we set out to do a couple of years ago. And actually, to explain why we're doing this, quick background. So Sam Altman, who's doing OpenAI, is my co-founder here together with Max Nordstern. So we started working on this like 4 years ago. And there's like two major motivations here. One was that AGI will come and kind of AI will continuously accelerate. And that was 4 years ago, a very kind of non-obvious thing to say. I think at this point, most would agree. And because of that, we will need infrastructure to support that. So a very simple example is verifying humanness on the internet is going to be increasingly important, as you can just create whatever digital content you want on the internet at scale. So bots on Twitter, video streams, kind of all of these things. So it will be very important to that you know I'm actually a human being, I'm not a robot. And that was one of the big theses. And the other big piece was that actually we are, so Sam was very excited about crypto since a long time, me too. And somehow we didn't have this breakthrough moment yet in kind of all of crypto. So how do we get this to a billion people scale or further? And so the initial idea was very simple. It was by solving this longstanding problem of proof of personhood, which would fundamentally solve the problem of civil resistance on the internet and in crypto, we could launch a digital currency by something like Bitcoin, a capped supply token, by giving ownership in it to every human being, just for being a human. And kind of the whole mechanism would not break down because it would be very hard to fraud an attack. And because you can do that, you essentially achieve incentive alignment on a really large scale, billions of dollars that just are directed towards creating a large network. And you can bootstrap a large network. And because of that, hopefully interesting properties will emerge and it will become increasingly useful because you have proof of personhood, you have people with crypto wallets that can exchange value. And that's what we set off to do. And then we spent the first 2 years really understanding how to solve this proof of personhood problem, which initially we thought would be kind of a short journey. We thought this is kind of just the initial thing we need to get through and then everything else will come. But we realized it's a pretty big topic, especially because of AI, because we essentially thought that everything that is purely digital, purely online, will eventually be very easy to fool and to attack because kind of an AI can just emerge these same properties. So that's kind of the quick history. So it's creating the largest financial network based on proof of personhood.
Super interesting. So if I understand, it's the goal of creating a blockchain network, but the difference is that instead of, like, for example, on Ethereum or Bitcoin, anyone can create however many wallets they want. In the WorldCoin network, wallets will be attached to a specific person. So you'll have your digital identity, which can allow people to prove that they're actually human and that there's you know, a specific blockchain ID or address linked to that person. Is that right?
That's not fully correct. So the WorldCoin is actually built on Ethereum. So it's running on Optimism mainnet, the token. And okay. As a user, you actually have two separate things. You have your standard Ethereum wallet, and when you sign up, you receive ownership in the network through WorldCoin, through the WorldCoin token. And the second piece you have is a public-private key for your proof of personhood that you can use to issue your knowledge proofs to different services. So kind of your wallet address is actually not at all coupled to your identity, because that would be terribly privacy-wise, right? Mm-hmm. Because everything is public. But rather, you have a separate set of keys that you can anonymously attest to different services. So you could say to Twitter, hey, I'm a human. I only have one account on Twitter, and I can prove that to you. Or you could even log into another identity company that wants to build a profile on top of that. So not only I'm a human, but I'm human and this guy's called Alex, and he grew up in Germany, and that's his address and whatever. So all of that is separate. Other people can build it on top. The very fundamental building block is this problem of proof of personhood, which currently only governments are solving for. So,
got it. Okay, so you're building, first of all, this proof of personhood, this digital ID. This system is based on Ethereum on Optimism. And so where does this financial network, the biggest financial network, is kind of the end goal. So where does this come in? Like, will this be a separate protocol that you'll build?
No, I mean, it is a namespace. It's an identity space. But the main thing is, like, how can we be the Tesla for crypto? How can we accelerate everything, right? So it will just essentially just give a lot of people Ethereum addresses. And we also have our own app called World App, but that's just the first wallet to connect to kind of World ID. There will be many others. So we just create kind of locally very dense networks of people that have a World ID and hold a WorldCoin token, right? So we don't want to build a wallet garden of our own blockchain or something, but rather everything is built on top of Ethereum. So if we succeed, it will just accelerate all of crypto adoption. And there's many ways we can capitalize on that, we believe.
Got it. Okay, cool. And what role does the WorldCoin token WLD play in all this?
Well, initially, it certainly is a bootstrapping incentive to get to a large enough network. We will put governance properties on top of that, and then there's many other things that I don't want to talk about, as you probably understand, with the regulatory uncertainty in the United States. And as I understand, this is a kind of mostly United States podcast. So the token is not in the U.S. It did not launch in the U.S. for the regulatory unclarity here. Mm-hmm. And so we will stay out of this here.
Got it. And before we get deeper into WorldCoin, I'd love to, you know, learn more about yourself. Like, what's your background and how did you become involved with the project?
Sure. So I grew up in Germany, somewhat close to Munich, so southern Germany. And I kind of did a lot of robot competitions and kind of all these science competitions that people do when I was young. And then as a result of that, I started a vertical farming company during high school. Then I went into physics and mechanical engineering. And then within physics, I went into theoretical physics. And within theoretical physics, I went into how to use very large neural networks to predict quantum systems that otherwise are really hard to predict. So I was kind of 5 years ago, I was in AI, essentially, before it was cool. And I did that then in Los Angeles at Caltech and wanted to do my PhD there. But then I got an email from Max and Sam with a kind of a two-pager of the description of WorldCoin. And I drove over to San Francisco and met with both of them. And we had a lot of interviews. It actually started as a software engineering interview, which is pretty funny in retrospect. But the project was so early, there was like so many things to figure out that we then decided that I should actually be a co-founder. And then I brought in the rest of the founding team, which are many of my friends from university. And then we started working on that kind of pretty much exactly 4 years ago.
You said you were finishing your degree when you got that email?
Yeah. I was kind of at the end of my master's and about to start my PhD. And so I did a research year at Caltech and wanted to do my PhD there. And then I got this email and I was like, okay, let's give it a try.
Amazing.
It sounded completely like, it probably still sounds crazy to you, but like 4 years ago, you have no idea how crazy the project sounded. So it felt like a crazy decision. And certainly my parents were pretty angry at that, but I think it turned out to be a good one.
Did the pitch include like all the details about, you know, just like using a device to scan people's irises, like all the biometric stuff coupled with AI, like, and crypto and all that stuff? Like I can't imagine, you know, just getting that sort of pitch 4 years ago and just like jumping and to do
No, it was not there yet. It was okay. Let me recap. What was the pitch back then? It was so certainly it was already the idea that, okay, we launched something like Bitcoin with the whole world, and to do that, we need to solve this proof of personal problem. That was already there. And I think it was already mentioned that there should be a device because probably everything else will break. But there was also mentioned AGI and all of this stuff. And all of that sounded very crazy to me back then. And actually, when I started working on it, I thought there would be like a less than 5% chance that I will still do the same thing in 6 months. I just thought this is like a worthy try, and I can always go back into science, or I can go to Google or like any of these like trading firms that wanted to hire me. So, I jumped all in.
How has the project changed since that initial pitch, or has it stayed mostly, you know, in line with the original goal?
I think it actually has remarkably so stayed within the original goal. And honestly, many props to Sam to be that long-term thinking. Like many of the things that we were talking about back then, at least I was not experienced enough in kind of technology to have a sense if they would really play out. And so many of them had like question marks to me. So like AI progress and all that stuff. But many of them actually played out reasonably well in exactly the time frame we discussed back then. So I think that's pretty, that was pretty impressive. Many like on the whole executional side of things, of course, like I think things turned out to be very somewhat different than we expected them to be. So for example, just to give you an example, like when we started working on this project and kind of we had this like simple two-party equation. It was like, okay, we have a digital currency and we can launch it simply because there's Ethereum, and so that should be easy. But now let's figure out this proof of personal problem. And we went a year just with that problem. And back then, the founding team and the engineering team was very small. It was like 4 or 5 people. Most of them were physicists because most of them were my friends. And so we did a lot of research. And within proof of personal, there's like 3 different areas you could think of. For one, you could just rely on governments. You could say, use KYC. And that turned out to be a dead end really fast because it's not global. We think many of the government systems will also break relatively soon. And it's also a little bit kind of against the whole point of crypto. So you want to build infrastructure that is can be relied on even if single parties fail. That's the whole point of it. So we turned it away relatively fast. The second big category that you could think of is what is called web of trust. So you, like, I know you and I know Camila in real life, you know me. And so we can attest to each other that we're actually real humans. And so we give each other a score of 1. Then you have a couple of friends and I have a couple of friends. And then we start spinning up a graph, and everyone has like some value attached to them of how likely it is that they're actually real. And social networks tried to do this since a long, long time. So Facebook, for example, had back then a pretty large team in that space. And so we built prototypes in that direction and just learned that even back then, these things would always fall to bots because you can just attack them in some ways. And we didn't think that actually blockchains would change that equation in any meaningful way, because Facebook has so much data about everyone. If they cannot figure it out, it will be really hard for kind of a decentralized network to do that. Mm-hmm. Then we went into biometrics, and we really didn't want to do that. because it sounded crazy. Like this whole idea of like, okay, we need to manufacture a hardware device, send it around the world for people. I mean, one of them being Sam Altman, but still for people and like no money shipping like a hardware device around the world sounded like a crazy idea. So, but there was just no other way. And we thought about it from every angle. And we thought it's a very important problem to solve. So we went down this path. And just to give you kind of the quick TLDR, which I think is important to take away, is your iPhone, or even, for example, the Vision Pro, because it now also has Iris ID or Optic ID, I think they call it. So it also scans the iris. It does a one-to-one comparison. So it essentially just ensures that I'm, again, Alex signing in. Right, so there's an embedding stored on the device. This is Alex, and I log in again, and get compared to this previous embedding. If it works, I can use my phone. But if we want to solve this proof of personal problem collectively as a society, we need to compare Alex against everyone else. So it goes from one to one to one to n, and the problem of that is that that's an exponential problem. So kind of the more people you get, the error rates explode exponentially. And so if you were to use an iPhone or something like a Vision Pro, after a couple million of people, the whole system would break down. So it's a really hard problem to solve. And the only thing that actually can technically do that is the iris. So you can look at fingerprints and face and all of those things. And none of them actually work at scale. Iris is the only thing that actually works. And so we went down this path with the constraint that we back then learned about zero knowledge proofs, which back then were still very early and very expensive. But we could draw kind of a system diagram of, okay, with zero knowledge proofs, we can actually build a system that can solve this proof of personal problem while leaving the users completely anonymous. And so without sharing any information about them, we can just build a system that in a decentralized manner allows everyone to prove they're actually unique humans to different services. And so that was then the starting point for actually like building it out. And then, then we had a year of like understanding that building a prototype hardware device to building and manufacturing a hardware device are two very different things. And so then we had to learn as a team how to actually manufacture devices. And then 1 year later, we learned that running a global operations is yet again, a very different thing. And so we hired many people from Uber and Airbnb and things like that. So kind of every year throughout the company really fundamentally changed. And now we are around 200 people. We have people all around the world. It's a fairly complex company to run. But it's I think the most exciting year by a large margin for the project.
DeFi Saver is an all-in-one management app for decentralized finance that provides access to top lending protocols in the Ethereum ecosystem. With support from protocols such as Aave, Maker, Compound, Spark, Liquidity, and Morpho Blue, and features such as one transaction leverage management, collateral and debt swaps, protocol shifts, and various automation features, it aims to make management of your on-chain positions much easier. Check it out at DeFiSaver.com. We'll definitely want to get into your expectations for this year, but just want to comment on how interesting the journey was to, you know, first of all, have the foresight to see that digital identity will become a huge problem in the future, especially with AI. And it's so interesting because obviously Sam is also leading, you know, the company at the forefront of AI, yep, which is creating this problem, but also, you know, head of this other company that's trying to solve it. So that's, you know, a crazy angle to this whole thing as well. But you know, having this foresight, seeing this problem, and then figuring out from, you know, just like what the best way to solve it is, and having research all these different alternatives, and then landing, yep, with scanning irises with a physical device as the only way to do it, even if it appears like it wasn't the thing that you guys wanted to do, but you just, you know, realize it's the only way around, yep, it. Super, you know, interesting way you know, come up with a concept.
It was a really crazy journey. Like, there's like so many crazy stories I could say about these last 4 years, and just one comment, because like, I mean, that's something that I think we, there's like a recent thing that emerged, is like, okay, Sam is creating the problem and solving the problem. I think that's somewhat unfair, because, I mean, AI is aiming to solve many scientific problems. It's like this massive valuable thing, and
Of course, it's not like AI is only creating this problem. It's a side effect to a technology that will massively help humanity. Yes. I 100% agree, but it's also creating this kind of collateral damage, this side effect.
Yep, that's fair.
Okay, so you arrived at creating digital identities via collecting this really sensitive piece of data, you know, the iris.
We actually don't collect it. That's the important thing. Yeah.
But right. So I wanted to get at that criticism. You guys have faced a lot of skepticism because of this impression that you're collecting a lot of sensitive data about people. Just recently, I think it was last week or this week, but very recently, there was a Hong Kong authorities visited your offices with a court warrant. You've also been investigated in Argentina, France, Kenya, among other countries, for privacy and data collection practices. So, yeah, there's a lot of concern about the way that you're, you know, operating and scanning people's biometrics. So, you know, wanted to hear how you are making sure, or like, how are you making sure people's data is protected? Like, what precautions are you taking to make sure that this data doesn't become that your system isn't hacked? I think, like, the concern here is that data is mishandled, right? That it can be sold off to third parties, maybe that it can even be leveraged by governments. And we can imagine this whole, like, dystopian scenario if this information is leaked.
Yeah. So, first of all, like, on the GR context, so, like, the governments, it's... we don't have any problem with governments, actually, so far. It's all that privacy regulators reached out and try to understand what the system is, which makes sense. Like, it's not surprising. If there's like a very public project in your country with Chrome orbs and kind of taking biometric pictures, like, for sure, as a privacy regulator, you better reach out, I think. So we expected that. And so we just work with a lot of patience with all of these governments and explain them how the actual system works, because it's very counterintuitive. Because, for example, something like zero knowledge proofs is nothing that is already at a kind of wide understanding. People don't have an intuition around how this technology works and how it actually can protect their privacy in a very fundamental way. And so let's go through the sign-up process and explain everything. So you want to sign up to WorldCoin. And first thing you do is you download an app. Currently, that's only the World app. So that's the first app that actually connects to that protocol. There will be many others in the future. You'll probably be able to do that with many of the ones you know, maybe Coinbase Wallet or Rainbow, things like that. So you can download currently World app. You say, okay, I want to verify WorldCoin. You see a map. Hopefully, we operate in your city, which unfortunately at this point in time is very likely not the case, because it's still relatively small. And then you see, like, as one of these like scooter apps, like you see an orb somewhere near your city, and you go there. That orb is actually not operated by us centrally, but there is, similar to Airbnb, there's entrepreneurs and people in cities and countries that actually operate these devices, and they put them in their stores or they put them in malls or something like that. And so you go there and you sign up, you show a QR code. The first thing that happens is you locally on your phone, you create a public private key. So we don't have that. You air gap that public key to the orb. So you just show a QR code, the orb reads that. Then the first thing the orb does It has a lot of sensors and 7 neural networks on the device that check that what, like, you're not trying to fraud the orb and you're an actual person. So you're not showing a display, or you don't wear any weird contact lenses or something like that. And once all of these checks pass, it takes a picture of your eye, similar to Clear at the airport, and actually many airport securities. And then on the device, it calculates what is called an iris code. So just from the picture, calculates a mathematical representation that just says, okay, that's most of the information we can get out of this picture. Deletes the picture, signs that iris code, and that iris code is then the only thing that actually leaves the device to currently our server. Later it will be blockchain. Then it is compared against all other users. If that comparison is correct, that iris code is inserted into a set of people, essentially. So, and it's actually a Merkle tree, like if you're that technical. Then me as a user, to actually use my world ID, those two things are completely delinked with zero knowledge proof. So the iris code doesn't tell you who that person is, and the wallet also doesn't tell you what iris code there is, but rather if I log into, let's say, Twitter, and Twitter would have world ID integration, I do a zero knowledge proof as a user that I'm with my private key on my phone, I'm included into that public set of people, in that Merkle tree of people. And so those two things are fully separate. So that's one. And then even that iris code in the very near future will be split apart between many parties. So it will be multi-party computation. So even that iris code will not be considered sensitive data anymore. So it's actually very extreme in privacy. That you will not find any other login mechanism that fundamentally doesn't take any data. So, and is unlinkable. So it's that's the thing. It's like, it's very counterintuitive because it uses biometrics. So that's the last thing you would expect. But it is the most privacy preserving way to actually solve that problem.
So the only thing you're storing in your servers is this iris code, like this correct. Mathematical way of representing somebody's eye.
Yes, correct. And plus to be clear, there's also, you can opt in optionally as a user. You can help us to train our systems, and some people do that. But by default, that is what happens. But similar to Apple, like when you, like somewhere later in the flow, you can opt in to help us improve our systems, like as the iPhone does, and then we store more data for these people if they help us to train our systems. But the default is we don't store any data other than iris code.
And then how is that code, again, linked to a specific person? Like if, say, I want to use my WorldCoin wallet, how does it know that I'm Camila? Like how does it use the iris code that you're storing?
So it's the iris code together with the public key in a Merkle tree. And then locally with my phone and my private key, I can make a zero knowledge proof on my phone that somewhere in this Merkle tree, my iris code and my public tree is encoded. And so then I submit to the platform, okay, I did a zero knowledge proof on that Merkle tree that I just pulled from the blockchain. And because that's an Ethereum L1, and I can prove that I'm somewhere in that set of users, but I will not tell you who I am.
Mm. Okay. And so this system can tell an app that I'm a human and that I'm...
Unique human.
I'm a unique human. Is that it?
Yep.
Is that all?
That is it. But if you think about it, that is actually... So if you draw out the kind of the landscape of identity... Mm-hmm. That's at the very core of everything, right? Because when your government gives you a passport, let's say, and currently actually the government is the only entity to solve such a problem, they make sure, okay, this is the only Alex living in Germany. And so he's a unique human. And then the government attaches separate sets of information to that. So name, birth date, et cetera, et cetera. And so similar it will be here, while we built this very fundamental and basic infrastructure that can be used for that very simple use case of on Twitter, I want to prove I'm a person versus a bot, which actually we think will be very useful. But also other people can build complete companies on top of that and can say, okay, it's like we have that fundamental building block and now we can build a credit score on top of that, or we can build a full identity profile on top of that. So it's like there will be an ecosystem of things you can build with that.
Right. So you can continue attaching information to that basic building block.
Correct.
Right. Okay. And then I wanted to address the other kind of major criticism that you faced, which is, you know, the way that you launched is you went to many countries in South America and I think Africa and exchange WorldCoin tokens for people scanning their irises. And so this came off a bit like, you know, a bit like you're bribing people with crypto to sign up with your system, you know, to give up this kind of important piece of information in exchange for crypto. So yeah, I mean, what are your thoughts? It can look a little bit, you know, questionable, I guess.
Yeah, I get it. The short answer is it's just called WorldCoin. So we really have been everywhere. And so we really kind of essentially split the world in kind of the major parts. And we just actually wanted to make sure that we are everywhere and the system can work everywhere. So it was in Latin America, it was initially Chile, Argentina, it was in Europe, Germany, Portugal, Spain, it was India, Bangalore, Delhi, Africa, Kenya. That was mostly it. We actually had more countries in Europe, initially Norway, Sweden, things like that. And so most of the users are actually in European countries right now, I think, Portugal and Spain above everything else. But yes, we also launched in Kenya and we also launched in Argentina and Chile. But I would totally do that again because I think that's the whole point of the project. And again, I think why that reaction came up that way from journalists is because they actually assumed we take something from people, but we really don't. Like that might be our own mistake that currently we don't have a business model in any regard. So like we actually just give away something right now. And we hope that as this becomes like bigger and kind of more established, we can build products around it to actually leverage technology we've built, but currently we don't. So we actually don't take anything. Rather, we just want to build technology that serves people. We think that technology is very valuable, and so we think we can build a big business on top of that eventually. But that's I think that's fundamentally where this reaction came from. It's like, okay, you take biometric data, you go to kind of low GDP countries. Why do you do that? And the answer is we just didn't do that.
Got it. And to, you know, follow up on like the business model point you made and just like tokenomics. So you mentioned WorldCoin is used as an incentive for people to, you know, sign up. And then you said in the future it'll be a governance token. But right now, other than being used for like rewarding people and incentivizing people, does it have any other utility in the ecosystem?
Again, I'm like somewhat careful with any of that framing, but as you know, like these things are very important for actual decentralization. So we laid it out in our decentralization roadmap in December. That's kind of 80% of our engineering resources currently go towards decentralization. And we think that that's actually to distribute both the governance and the ownership over the whole network to people. It's a core building block. There's many other ways how the token can be used in the future. There will be an L2. There will be a lot of utility on top of the network that can be used through potential fees or something like that. But there's no concrete thinking around that yet. It's also not implemented yet.
I read something about you guys planning some sort of UBI. Is that still in the works?
One of Sam's original intentions for the project was that kind of as AI becomes increasingly powerful, we actually have that possibility to do something like UBI. And UBI is a very dangerous word because it's somewhat politically charged. But if you take away all of the political sentiment and you just go to technology, you have like one technology that generates a lot of wealth and you can make much more than any company ever did, probably. And you can make that accessible to a large number of people and you can lift them up, give them better education, all that stuff. That's, I think that's strictly cool. And so to do that, you need an identity system and you need a financial system. And so essentially we build infrastructure for someone else to do that in the future. And that someone else might be Sam. So,
right. What has adoption been like? You first launched in July, right?
We launched last in July. Year? Yep.
And so far, I saw your website says more than 3 million humans are on WorldCoin, 120 countries. So yeah, if you can talk a bit about this growth and what are some of the early use cases you've seen using WorldCoin, or maybe for now it's just getting more and more people into the system and those will be built out later.
Yeah, it's been a really crazy couple of months. We're now at, I think 3.2 million or something signups. We are at, I think, 6 million app users. So people that use WorldApp. It's over 2 million monthly active users. So it's one of the biggest wallets in the world, I think, at this point in time. Top three. Which is not what we actually aim to do, but that's a nice side effect. On one end, it was just crazy to live through that. On the other hand, it kind of we just followed our growth projections and kind of our rollout plan. So we were not super surprised about what actually happened. There was like some cool and also shocking moments along the way. Like things went wrong, things went really well. There's like many, many stories I could tell along the way. But broadly, everything went as we planned and expected it to happen. In terms of use cases, now we are actually at a point where, for example, in Argentina, I think we have 600,000 users, monthly active users. I think the other crypto apps have like 2 million or something in total. So like we now get to a point where we are a big part of the whole crypto ecosystem. And so now actually companies in the country approach us and want to work with us and things like that. So like it's very cool to see how that actually plays out, that whole thesis of, as you get big enough, it will get very interesting also for Web2 players or kind of players that are not at all affiliated with crypto. We very much see that playing out. We see now a lot of big, like really big companies reaching out to us and wanting to work with us. So that's also exciting. Most of the current use cases, though, are actually around the wallet. So, for example, in Argentina, we have people that hold stable coins in there. And they send stable coins to their friends or something like that. Of course, because there's a hyperinflation in Argentina. So stablecoins are very, very useful. Mm-hmm. But also in Kenya, actually, it's somewhat similar. So yeah, we see a lot of normal crypto use cases just at a very, very large scale. So people swapping tokens, buying tokens, selling tokens, sending them to their friends, holding stablecoins. That's most of the things we see. There's not that much on the identity side yet, but that's to be expected. And it probably will take another couple months.
Okay, so far, the main app for WorldCoin is your wallet. Yep. And people are using the wallet in, you know, the same way they would use any other wallet, I guess. Like, I guess, so for now, the identity part isn't like such a core part of how people are using
other than WorldCoin. The onboarding, right? Because they actually claim their WorldCoin because they onboard with their WorldID. So kind of that's the biggest one, yes. And the other thing is like the wallet is much simpler. So it's really hard to get your mom to use MetaMask. Mm-hmm. And so we abstracted all of that away and made it very simple. And I think that's, we certainly get a very different user group than the normal crypto wallets in countries like Argentina.
If you haven't already considered building your next smart contract in Rust, you gotta have a look at Soraban. You can migrate your existing Solidity smart contracts over to Soraban, and we'll show you how. You can also get funding for your projects. There's a $100 million adoption fund just to drive the adoption of Soraban, so you can help build the ecosystem and potentially qualify for grant awards up to $150,000. You can visit us now at soraban.stellar.org to learn more.
I also saw some integrations with like Mercado Libre and Reddit, I think, and some other kind of, you know, big web Discord, companies. So how does that work? Like, what do these integrations do?
Really depends. And there's now so many of them that I cannot even recall them. But for example, on Reddit, if there's a subreddit, you can now attest kind of I'm a human and it's subreddit. So you can essentially, you can build bot-free subreddits, which is a big problem in Reddit specifically. The same is in Discord. You can just verify, okay, you're a human as in a Discord, server. If that Discord server supports that, which is very easy to support. So same with Minecraft, same with Shopify. So like it all goes in that direction. And actually, whenever we surface something like that in the app, it has around 100,000 page views a day. Sounds like it's pretty big for crypto specifically. So we see some decent activity around that. It's just that I think I'm not yet at a place where I'm personally excited about, okay, this really landed. I think it's still too early for that, but we see a lot of usage around it for sure.
So how exactly, like, say, okay, I want to create a Discord server and make sure there are no bots there and want to integrate WorldCoin. How does it work?
So I'm sure you're familiar with these Discord bots, right? Where you do, you say, I'm actually not sure what it's called. I think verify humanus or verify rockers, something like that. And you then press enter and then a QR code shows up, essentially. You scan that QR code with your wallet and you say verify. So it's like, it feels very similar to wallet connect or something like that. It's just a QR code. You scan a QR code, then locally you do the zero knowledge proof. So it takes a little bit longer. It takes like whatever 20 seconds, and then you just get the checkmark Discord. So it's very simple. It's very, very simple. It's just like scan a QR code. You could do the same thing on Mercado Pago or Reddit. It's always the same flow.
Got it. Okay. So first thing, obviously, you need your WorldCoin app. You need to have gone through the onboarding process. And then to verify your humanness with any of these Web2 apps, you'll basically have to connect to scan a QR code on that app, and that will connect to your WorldCoin app, which will sign as your knowledge proof and just prove that you're human.
Yes, correct.
Nice. Cool. And like for that specific use case, do you have data on like, I don't know, how many people are verifying themselves?
I unfortunately don't have it at the top of my head, but I actually looked at it last week. So again, it's like it's 100,000 calls per app per day. And there's, I think, around 15 apps or something. So it's a lot of calls per day. I'm actually not sure. The problem is always, like, for example, if you want to build a Discord server that is verified, then the problem is that most of these people actually also need to have a World ID. And so I think a lot of what we see is that there's a Discord server and there's like a lot of WorldCoin fans and they have the World ID, but we are not yet at a scale and we don't support enough cities yet that it's like a truly global thing, because like someone in Tokyo is just really hard to, actually Tokyo is not relatively simple, but whatever, someone in the Philippines is not able to sign up also. So as long as we're not like truly global, I'm somewhat bearish on that use case to fully pick up. And it's, I think just, we will see a lot of scale in terms of people actually doing it. But personally, I'm not yet excited about it, because I think if we need to be truly global for that to become a very usable feature.
Makes sense. So what use case are you super bullish on?
I'm just super bullish about how this will grow this year. I think it will be by far the biggest thing in terms of crypto adoption, by probably order of magnitude or more. So that should be tens of millions. And that's a lot for crypto. And so I think if we find a way to expose that to developers really well, and so developers can build things that get exposed to all of these users, it should be very, very powerful. And I think we will see, especially locally, I think we will see in a couple countries, we will see very interesting things happening, something like Argentina or Chile, maybe Kenya. So that's personally, actually, there's like something here where I traveled so much and I saw so many countries. And I think I see the world now through very different eyes than the usual crypto founder does.
Interesting.
I think...
In what way?
Well, I think... Unfortunately, many of the crypto, or most of the crypto founders live like... And that's not to their fault, but you live a little bit in a bubble. Like if you sit in New York and you try to build the financial system for the world, it's just a really hard thing to do. And it's like I think you come up with a very wrong perception of what actually would be helpful, what actually would be useful. And so it was just pretty wild to me to see how crypto can become a true necessity and not just a fun thing in really huge part of the world. So we don't talk about small localized countries. We talk about billions of people crypto could literally change their whole life. And that is pretty inspiring. And so just actually seeing that, but also understanding how different the challenges are per country. So for example, you go just from Argentina to Chile and you are in a completely different world and the problems are completely different. Or the same thing as in Africa, you go from Kenya to Ghana and suddenly everything is completely different. That was just very interesting and showed me how far we still have to go as an industry, I think. There's so much to build yet. And I think it will not happen through an ivory tower from San Francisco or Brooklyn and just like build cool things and hope the world will adopt them. I think that's not how that works.
I love that take. 100% agree. So crypto can become a necessity and can change lives completely, especially in the developing world. I agree. Like I'm originally from Chile. I lived many years in Argentina. So yeah, I see these problems are super real. I mean, problems of inflation, of currency controls, of censorship by government, authoritarian government, meddling with people's finances. These are like, real problems that crypto can solve and that are not about flipping, the next meme coin.
I just wanted to say that.
Or like building the next yield farm or, farming an airdrop. I think that there are very real and inspiring challenges for crypto founders to tackle. And it can be a bit frustrating that many of us in the industry end up like in this bubble and forget about, the world changing possibility that this industry can have. In that sense, with WorldCoin, like how specifically do you think WorldCoin can tackle these like bigger issues?
Well, that's a good question. I do think because of what we do, we will be exposed with all the problems that exist that no one else is solving yet and that are somewhat important. Right. So for example, to start with a very simple one is like, okay, so in many countries we launch and we're like super excited about market and super excited about everything happening there. But then you realize, okay, there's just not at all any off at all on ramping. And so you need to solve that problem first. And then we need to tackle the education problem also, because maybe like crypto is just like super early and you need to explain everything. And then the next one is integration with financial institutions. Like maybe it actually would be useful to pay in stores. So the interesting thing in crypto is there's like some countries that I think are actually somewhat what people in crypto have talked about for 15, 20 years or something. It's like in Turkey even Argentina, I think actually is it's pretty cool in that sense that you can, there's like this Mercado Pago QR code that is now open. And so every wallet can connect to that. And so you can literally pay with your crypto in every store. Like that's something that I think people have been talking about for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And so I think because we will end up with a lot of users in many markets and with a local team, we have potentially a chance to just build a lot of that infrastructure that hopefully others can build on top of, right? So maybe in another country that is not Argentina, we can build that QR infrastructure and we can take our learnings that kind of what are the things we have seen in Argentina working that maybe we can take to Chile or we can take to Brazil or we can even take to Kenya. And so there's just very few projects that have this very global lens and have enough people to actually understand these things and learn from them. And so I think hopefully we can leverage on that. It's definitely not a given, but I hope so.
Super interesting. I'd love to dive into, you know, your most recent announcement and plans for the year going forward. So I saw that you are redesigning the orb. So just curious, like what will the new orb look like and what was the thinking behind needing to redesign it?
Yeah, that was really funny. It was actually not an announcement, but rather I was giving a talk and that journalist, which I really like, then wrote an article about that. So it was not a planned announcement by any means. But we are working on a new version of the orb since a while, actually. And even already on the next one, so not only the one that will ship relatively soon, but already the next one. Because the thing about hardware is it always takes like almost 2 years, to be honest, from like you have the initial idea and design to like you go to full production scale. And so currently what is in the field is actually prototypes. We didn't want to launch with that at all. It was just, we were faced with that decision that if we wait for the kind of the actual production devices, it will take another couple months. And so we just, okay, like that's, if it works, it will also work with the current orbs because technically they're similar. They just look a little bit less sophisticated and things like that. So we just decided to launch with that, but these are still prototypes. And so, there's a lot of very interesting things with the current orb, right? Like it's chrome, which many people love, other people completely hate. So it's definitely very polarizing, which actually I think was a very good thing. And we can talk about that. But the future generations, I think there will be some of that. There will be like this like very futuristic versions of it. But then also some of them will just look like an Apple device. They will be very toned down and colorful and friendly. And so it actually can scale outside of tech audience because
interesting.
It's going to roughly have the same shape, but it's going to look very different and much, much more friendly.
Friendlier, like more colorful.
More colorful, yeah.
Oh, interesting. Can't wait to see it. Make your trades go further with Matcha, the DEX aggregator from ZeroX. Get the best prices on swaps with smart order routing and over 5 million tokens at your fingertips. Tap into more than 120 DEXs at once for the best value in DeFi and trade cross-chain for free across 7 networks. And with Matcha Auto, MEV protection will save you money as your trades settle quicker through private market makers. Trade on Matcha today. Okay, and then the plans to decentralize. Like, yep. What's that roadmap like?
It's intense. I think that's the... So we published... Balaji is a friend of ours, and like he had this idea of a tech tree, and he kind of publicized this whole idea. So we now have a tech tree on our website you can find, where you essentially see the whole system laid out, and you can go actually in quite some detail on every part of it. So you can see what connects to the orb, and what are all the systems on the backend that connect to that, what connects to the app, what are all the systems that connect to that. And so essentially we have a roadmap we go through from a current level of decentralization to a kind of how can we accelerate that and make it even stronger and better and things like that over time. And it's a very complicated problem in our case because that will mean that we need other people to build orbs in the future, right? There need to be other manufacturers. There need to be other people also having input on the design, all of that stuff. So it's complicated. It will take time. But I think the important piece is that most of our engineering effort actually goes into that currently, which is counterintuitive and that many founders give me a lot of heat for and definitely investors. But I think it is important. I think that the project will not work any other way.
What does the end state look like?
Well, the end state is that you will have some version of these devices in pretty much all over the place, similar to ATMs. And I think there will not only be one for Tools for Humanity, but there will be many other ones. There will be maybe one for Microsoft or and maybe even local players that connect to the WorldCoin protocol. And you will be able to verify essentially everywhere. And I think billions of people will hold the WorldCoin token, which I think itself will be very interesting. That's something we have not seen, what that actually means. And on the internet, you will end up with whatever, a billion plus human network, probably the only one of that kind that exists on the internet. And so that should allow a lot of very, very cool and exciting use cases. So if you think about it, I think it's like, it's pretty profound because if you think about Meta and like all of these other networks, they're neither open nor do they have a lot of important primitives with them. So they don't have financial primitives and things like that. I think what is cool about crypto and this whole idea of interoperability, and if you now take something like WorldCoin in the case of success, we will end up with an open user graph of more than a billion people with identity primitives built on top of them and financial primitives built on top of them. So it should be a quite crazy explosion of innovation on top of that. That's the hope.
Super inspiring vision. But what are, like, what's the biggest risk you see to that happening?
I think at this point, it's mostly an execution risk. I think it's like, we're not fast enough, really. I think that's the biggest risk pretty much any startup faces. I think regulatory and things like that, like it sounds, I think that always sounds much more challenging from the outside probably because like these are kind of the headlines that you see, but there's like 20 other countries we talk to and like it's that all will be fine. I think there will be a path forward. There's nothing existential there. And I think, of course, there will be debates with regulators and kind of discussions, all, but that's healthy and that's okay. And that's their job. So I think there's nothing on the regulatory side that like I think is very existential. I think it really is all about execution, rolling this out really fast, getting to tens of millions of people by end of this year, and then building the products on top of that to actually make it useful.
And it's execution risk that you can't complete these plans before you run out of money, basically.
No, running out of money at this point is really hard, I think.
So well, that's a good statement to make.
I think that's not anymore the case. I think, but there's something else about startups where if you're not fast enough, you start losing in so many different ways. I think your team gets demotivated.
Outside, to competitors?
In our case, it's really hard also to have competitors because like we spent 4 years and $250 million on top of that. And I think it's just going to be hard for anyone else to do that in a reasonable time frame. I think there will be competition, but I think that will still take probably another year or two. Okay. But again, I think it's even much more, it's more fundamental than that. I think like if as a startup you're slow, your team will be demotivated. I think the external world will think you're failing and then you like you get into like that cycle. And it's so I think that's why overall momentum and shipping really fast and growing really fast is very, very important for a startup to succeed. And we're not different than that. And then there's this other fundamental thing actually that is that proof of personality will turn out to be like we have been very right. Proof of personhood will turn out to be a major, major thing for society. And actually it might turn out to be the really, really large scale use case of crypto could totally be like in this year, there's eight elections, eight major countries have major elections. And maybe all of this will become a major debate in kind of the whole public sphere. It's like, okay, how can we protect something like Twitter from AI systems changing public opinion on a large scale? Like I could totally imagine all of that to happen. I could totally imagine in the next 2 years, this problem becoming a kind of from a niche debate that you and I have here to like a truly societal scale debate. And then us actually being able to solve the problem in a very fundamental way, but we're just not global enough and not fast enough and not big enough to even be considered as a solution for that. And then something that is maybe technically inferior, but can somewhat approximate the problem, come along or something like that. Like it's,
so you're seeing this huge opportunity, this like massive global challenge that is looming above our heads and will present our before us. And so you want to be there and ready to actually seize it.
Yes. Or the other way, like you could also say, we hope that we can help. Because I think I will be fine either way, but I think it would be really definitely very good for this industry if we were there to seize it, and hopefully good for the world too.
Nice. And then finally, you know, it's been 6-7 months since you launched. So what are the, you know, main lessons that you've gotten away from that so far? Like, is there anything you would do differently? What do you think you got absolutely right?
I would do so many things differently. So it was definitely it really was the ride of a lifetime. It was like, it was much crazier than I think any of us have imagined, like maybe other than Sam, have imagined this playing out. Like, I mean, just if you go back the last 6 months, we launched, and I think we have been in every national news and national TV in pretty much every country that we even remotely touch for pretty much 2 weeks. And so like this, the project suddenly turned from a kind of a small thing that people knew to like this thing the whole world was talking about for quite some time. And I mean, that itself was like a wild experience. It was like, and of course, as you know, it comes in waves. Like people are angry at it and they're excited about it. And like you get like so much love and so much hate at the same time and all this stuff. So it's like, that's just, even though I've now been exposed to so much of that, it's always again, quite an experience to live through. Such a huge cycle. Then then suddenly so many people wanted to sign up that we had in front of some hours, we had thousands of people waiting. Not hundreds, but thousands. We had like in Kenya, we had 8 orbs and we had 9,000 people waiting in front of 8 orbs. In Argentina, we had to shut down all operations for almost a month because we could just not handle it. The same with India, the same with like so many other, there's like, so we launched and it was like this massive press cycle. And then with that, there came a lot of attention and so many people wanting to sign up. And then that led to this, like all of our servers melting and the systems constantly breaking, the operations on the ground facing challenges that we did not even remotely anticipate would happen in such a short amount of time. So it was like this like massive intensity, 7 days a week, 24/7, like constantly you had something break all over the world. Then 2 weeks later, you suddenly had police or governments getting involved because like it continued to be that crazy. And so then you suddenly had government relations be a thing. And we didn't have anyone in the company, like one person that was remotely a GR guy. And so it was kind of just like this escalation cycle. And then I had to testify in front of Kenyan parliament, which was like a crazy thing to do. So it's like just crazy event after crazy event, week by week. And if I could go back, of course, I would foresee many of these things probably better. Like you could prepare much better for on-the-ground operations. You could prepare much better for GR and actually maybe interact with these governments before you actually launch. But then again, I would not have predicted any of this. It was just way too crazy and not what we expected. So that's... And we made it work. It just took iterations. I think we're good. But it definitely was a pretty crazy 6 months.
Yeah, sounds super intense. But yeah, I guess, you know, it'll prepare you for, you know, all of the next steps and milestones that you're working towards.
Hopefully.
Nice. Alex, this has been so interesting. Really appreciate you taking the time to talk about WorldCoin with me. Really clarified a lot of the, you know, concepts and ideas I had about the company. So yeah, appreciate you, you know, walking through like all the criticisms and and yeah, being open about, you know, the plans and super exciting vision for the project. So yeah, we look forward to, you know, continuing to cover everything you do. And yeah,
of course. Again. Thanks for having me, Camila. This was fun. Mm-hmm.